Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors because they have the courage to take their stories, their lessons, and things that they've learned along the way and just share it with the many, ultimately changing their legacy and destiny in the process. And if you're looking to write a book out there, check out Dream Starters Publishing. We can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. And if you have a book that's already done, you want to generate leads with it, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. Now, this book that we're about to talk about today with the author is really for those individuals who maybe saw a shift in the world. I know that in 2016, I became a little bit more aware of the political sphere because my business started to take off. And I did realize how business and politics are connected, whether you want to realize it or not. And the more I became aware of the political sphere, the more I started to dive into it, letting my beliefs known. And it really did serve me because I started to attract the right individuals into my world. That's why if you're out there and you're thinking about, should I be political? Should I talk about my beliefs? I believe you lean in on that because it's showing your true authentic self. And our guest is an individual who probably looked into this quite a bit. The book is called The New Political Capitalism, How Businesses and Societies Can Thrive in a Deeply Politicized World. So it's an honor to have Joe Zammit Lucia with us. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this book. I'm assuming you saw some major shifts over the past couple of years, and that's why you wrote it. But why did you write it? And also give us a little background on where you come from and what got you to where you're at now.
Sure. Let's start with the background. So I trained as a physician originally and practiced medicine for a bit. And then I moved into the business world and went to work in the pharmaceutical business. Then I was an entrepreneur and set up my own business, which was a management consulting business, consulting in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space. And I had that for 11 years, grew it to about 200 people. And then sold the business and then got involved in various things. And one of the things I got attracted to was to try and understand politics and the political way of thinking. I thought there were two big drivers in the world that, you know, made a difference to the kind of world we live in. One was business, and I felt I knew a little bit about that, having spent most of my life in it. And the other was politics, which I knew nothing about. And certainly didn't learn anything about in business. So I dived into the political world and spent some time there. And then I was struck just by how different the business way of thinking and looking at the world was from the political way of thinking mm-hmm. and looking at the world. And both are legitimate, but they're fundamentally different. And as you know, as business started, as the world, as you outlined, as the world started to change and change quite dramatically, you know, I trace that the start of that change to 9/11 at the start of this century, and then we had, you know, the Occupy Wall Street movement. Then we had the great financial crash, which told us that our current financial system is really maybe on its last legs. Then we had COVID. So, you know, everything started to change and political issues started to become ascendant and affecting how businesses operated and how business leaders had to think. And my thought was that most business leaders don't have much time for spending on political issues. And they come at the world from a different position. So the genesis of the book started in trying to lay out for business leaders in a way that might be helpful to them what the political way of thinking is and how it's different from the business way of thinking, and how, you know, it is useful to business to start understanding that way of thinking. And as I was writing, this was a lockdown project, by the way. So as I was writing, it became clear to me that the changes we're seeing are pretty fundamental and that we're entering a new era, which I have called political capitalism, which over time, I think will take over from the financialized form of capitalism that we've had since the sort of second half of the 20th century. So then I developed that idea, what does a new political capitalism look like, and how do you thrive in this new emerging environment? And the book was published, I think, 3 days or something before Russia invaded Ukraine. So that was another event that embroiled business in lots of decision-making in the geopolitical sphere.
One of the quotes that really stand out in this book, and I didn't read the whole thing, but I just kind of skimmed through it. And I love the first quote, and it's by Barbara Solnit. And it says, "Politics is pervasive. Everything is political. And the choice to be apolitical is usually just an endorsement of the status quo in the unexamined life." Now, that really hits home because I was not political. I didn't really care about politics at all. Didn't pay attention to them, just realized there were Democrats and Republicans. But as I became more aware through business, I started to care more. I started to see the world from a different perspective. And I started to examine myself, my beliefs more. And that's whenever I realized that standing for something is what it's all about when it comes to having a business. And to have a business and not stand for something, it doesn't make sense to me. And so people who get into the business world, maybe they have to put their heart on the sleeve. They have to show their core values. They have to show who they really are. Their personality creates their personal reality. And at a point, because of this, maybe the temperature of the political environment, there's a point where you have to make a decision. Do I let people know what I believe or don't I? And I think it serves you very well to really take off the mask. Pun intended, if you will. So do you think that you said it goes back to 9/11 as the starting point, but do you believe that it's undoubtable for anybody to become an entrepreneur? It's, I guess, inevitable for them to become political in the process. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think we're all political. We're all political animals. And it depends how you define politics. Because as you outlined, a lot of people think of politics in partisan terms. Am I a Republican or am I a Democrat? Mm-hmm. That's a small part of politics. I define politics as the mechanism, imperfect though it is, the mechanism by which, through which we decide collectively what kind of society we want to live in. Now, political parties and the political debate is part of that, but it's not the only part. So, for instance, what is the role of business in our society? That is a political question. There'd be lots of people who have varying and different and opposing views on that. But the reality is that business is part of the panoply of our political institutions. So business is a political actor. Even if it doesn't take a stand on explicitly political issues, it's a political actor because business has a big impact on the type of society in which we live. You know, if you pay people well, that makes a difference than if you pay them a pittance. It makes a difference to the kind of society in which we live. If you decide to shut down your factories in Ohio and move them all to Vietnam, that has an impact on the kind of society in which we live. It then has a party political impact as well later on. So what business does and how people run their businesses in itself is a political question as well as an economic and commercial question. Because they're affecting the type of society in which we live and the type of life that people lead. Now, you talked about taking a stand. And I think there are various ways you can look at that. So there are some businesses, like Patagonia, for instance, as an example, for whom taking a stand as an environmental activist company is an integral part of their brand. They have created an ecosystem of customers and supporters that are environmentalists. So it's an integral part of their business, and therefore they take a stand on various things. Other companies take a political stand maybe intermittently. So when Nike decided to jump in on the Black Lives Matter campaign and use that as part of its marketing strategy for a period of time, and I understand that it was quite successful, that was essentially a marketing campaign. So they took a political issue and turned it into a temporary marketing campaign. What is difficult, I think, is when companies stand up and say, I believe in this political issue, when it has nothing to do with their business. So that, I think, is a challenge. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, why should we, when people say, if you're running a big company, say 100,000 people, and you say, these are our values, whose values are we talking about? Are we talking about the CEO's values? And does anybody care about that? Are we talking about the shareholders' values? Where if you're a public company, you've got hundreds of thousands of shareholders scattered around the world, so you have no idea what their values are. Are we talking about the employees' values? Well, again, the employees reflect the electorate. So likely they have a vast range of different political opinions and different values. So how do you cater to that? And these are the challenges, I think, that business people these days have to manage. One of the things about politics is the difficulty of politics is that you have to make decisions when every single citizen wants something different from you. Now, business has not really had to deal with that issue because the idea was that business is here for one thing only, which is to make as much profit as possible. That has changed. And now business people are business leaders have to think politically because they have constituencies, they have shareholders, they have employees, they have customers, all of whom might want something different from them. And the skill of balancing that is a political skill, which they don't teach you at business school.
Well, I think the word capitalism is very political now, obviously, right? Just having the word capital. Are you a capitalist? Ooh, then you are for the rich. You're for the greedy. You are for your self-interest, right? So I think the reason why capitalism is getting a bad name is because of the school system. And I think the school system is making everything political, ultimately, blaming the system itself and blaming those who benefit from starting businesses. So I think it starts in the school system. Do you believe that that is a crucial variable that really did change over the past 50, 60 years? And my next question is, I do believe the fire starter to it all was a capitalist running for office, a major capitalist, somebody, an outsider, a Donald Trump in 2016, who was completely against all the political players. Mm-hmm. He's the one that changed the game. So number one, I think the big variable is school. Do you believe that that's the case also? And do you believe the most instrumental piece to all of this is Trump not only running, but winning?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to what you say. The school system reflects our social belief system. So, it changes over time. And, for the last 70 years, we've had a capitalist system which has become ever more financialized. So when people say the problem is capitalism, or we have to think about capitalism, I think the first thing we need to agree on is, what do we mean by capitalism?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody bandies the word around and nobody can agree on what it means. So I take the most minimalist definition of capitalism, which is a system that allows people to own capital, to own private property. Now, there are various forms of capitalism. There's socialist capitalism, there's financialized capitalism, there's consumer capitalism, there used to be feudal capitalism, there used to be industrial capitalism. Capitalism morphs and changes over time. I think what we've seen since, say, the 1980s or so, is not that we've suddenly become capitalist, because we've always been. Apart maybe from North Korea, there isn't a country in the world that is not capitalist to a greater or lesser degree in a mixed economy. But what's happened since the 1980s or so is that capitalism has become financialized. So the only thing that matters is what you can count in dollars. And if you can't count it in dollars, it doesn't matter. Hmm. And we also got the other element where big companies and all sorts of companies really stopped focusing on making a profit as a result of producing good products and services and started making their profits through financial engineering. That is what I define as financialization. So if you take Boeing as a current classical example, they forgot that they should be excellent aircraft engineers, and they became financial engineers. And we know the results of that. Mm-hmm. And that financialization, I don't think it's capitalism that's the problem. It's the financialization, the progressive financialization of capitalism that's the problem. To your question about Donald Trump, the unusual thing about Donald Trump as a businessman going into politics is that he was successful. Because we've had a whole train of business people, particularly in the United States, you know, people who, the lady, I can't remember her name, who used to run Hewlett-Packard, and, you know, lots, the lady from eBay, you know, lots of people who have believed that because they were successful in business, they could jump on the political stage and be successful there. Mm-hmm. And they weren't. Because the two are actually quite fundamentally different worlds. The other person who was successful was Michael Bloomberg. There's a businessman who was also successful as a politician, as mayor of New York. And of course, Trump was successful in that he won the presidency, which is no mean feat. But I think if you look at the history, you know, the world is littered with the graveyard of business people who tried to jump into politics and didn't make it. We've had some successes. I've mentioned a couple in the US. There was Berlusconi in Italy. There was the guy in who was the Prime Minister of the Czech Republic. So there have been successes of business people becoming successful politicians, but they're very rare.
Yeah, what I noticed from Trump, and maybe like you said, he's the anomaly because he, number one, was successful, but number two, he entrenched himself in the world of Hollywood, in the world of daytime TV and nighttime TV, that he was media just as much as he was entrepreneur. And so very, very hard to do that and still be able to grow your business. So he was sort of a one-off, in my opinion. And I don't know if we'll ever have anybody like him. But I think he did show something. Hey, I know the system's corrupt. I used it. And if they wanted to change the IRS code, they could have changed it for the past 50 years. But he started speaking the truth. And I think it really did create a divide. In my opinion, that was the great divide. You either loved them or you hated them. There was no gray. And so when that happened, it's either you're on one side or the other, ultimately creating this, you know, enemy situation. The other side is the enemy. Well, if you're not with him, then you must be on the other side and you must not be awake. And so I noticed that is whenever there was a major split and everything from that day forward became political. And so when I'm out there talking about business development, I see people are angered by it because, you know, if I'm supporting Trump, I'm only in it for the rich people. If they don't really look at the definition of capitalism, like you said, I look at it as a definition of wealth through servitude. So I only make money if I help someone get to where they want to go. And, you know, my clients, they will only do well if they help enough people get to where they want to go. So it's wealth through servitude. And I guess Trump really molded people. But like iron, like you're either on this side or you're not. And it's clear as day. So that clear as day moment made everything political, ultimately creating the behind the veil situation for the world to pick a side And it makes it easy for people to know where they stand politically based off of, do they support this one guy or not? Plain as day. It's wild.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, Trump, we could say, is a one-off. If we look back in history, of course, there are similar things. But I think what this phase that we're going through shows us is what I argue in the book, that our system of financialized capitalism is no longer working. It's running out of road, because every system runs out of road after a while. And when systems run out of road, people are unhappy. And politicians emerge that use that dissatisfaction to polarize. And this has happened, you know, over the ages. So, you know, Trump is one phenomenon that you described very well, but we're getting the same in many European countries.
Yes. Because who's the man of Argentina? What's his name?
Milei.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. He's doing the same thing.
Yeah. And we have it here in Europe too. And that is a sign, I think, of the fact that the fundamental foundations of our system have grown old, and they're starting to fray, and we don't know where to go next. So people who can, you know, use that sentiment to their political advantage emerge in these sorts of environments. You know, it's as Gramsci put it, you know, the old is dying and the new is not yet ready to be born. And in this interregnum, monsters emerge. So, you know, this has been something that's happened through the ages. But I think a corollary of the fact that our system is fraying is what you have put so well, which is, what is the purpose of business? I remember when I used to work in the pharmaceutical business, we were in this meeting with commercial people and R&D people, and the research people were presenting their ideas. And one of the commercial people got bored and stood up and said, well, this is all very well and scientifically very interesting, but you guys seem to forget that we're here to make money. And the president of R&D turned to him and said, he was a wise old Scottish man, said, laddie, we're not here to make money. We're here to make medicines that make people better. And if we can do that, then we'll make money. And that is something that has been lost in this age of financialized capitalism, that too many businesses and business people believe that the purpose of business is to make money. It isn't. The purpose of business is somehow to make other people's lives better and to do that well in such a way that you can make money. Damn. You know, Bear Stearns, which is a bank that you may or may not remember.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've gone out of business, used to have a sign in their lobby, it is reputed, that said, we make nothing but money. Well, look where that got them.
Wow, I didn't know about that sign. Well, when it comes to the strategies like for businesses to succeed in today's environment, in my opinion, maybe this is in your book, but polarization is good. You assemble a tribe by casting a vision, and the vision that you are sharing with the world will either have people say, I want to be a part of that vision, or I'm going to deselect myself from you because I don't want that vision. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's great that you are polarizing. And I think that's a crucial aspect of great leaders, is that they're clear as day. There is no gray. These people, you either love them or you hate them. So is that one of your solutions? Do you recommend that to businesses?
I think businesses can choose to go, you know, first of all, there's no such thing as business. There are millions and millions of individual businesses, and they will all make their own decisions depending on their market, depending on how they see their brand and their future and what they provide. So there is no answer for everybody. But I think there's a lot of strength in what you say, in that increasingly businesses are choosing to compete. Some businesses, not all, are choosing to compete on the basis of their value system. I mentioned Patagonia as one of them. Benetton was another one. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to put out these very hard-hitting ads and posters and commercials on social issues, which essentially gave their brand something very edgy and distinguished them in what is, you know, more or less a commodity market of okay type clothing. So businesses can choose, as you say, to differentiate themselves on the basis of their political stance, on the basis of their values, and create an ecosystem of customers, suppliers, shareholders that buy into that. Some businesses may quite legitimately choose not to do that. So, you know, if you're Boeing, for instance, selling to multiple airlines, all of which are different, or engaging in the defense space, or if you're a multinational company that is operating everywhere in the world, where every country has a different set of values, a different set of political ideas, a different set of structures and expectations, then it's quite hard to impose, you know, what might be democratic or republican American values in Saudi Arabia or in Malaysia or in China, where you might be operating. So these are quite challenging things that people have to balance. And to balance those, you need political skills, not business skills. Mm-hmm. And it's time that upcoming business people were taught these political skills as part of their education, which they're not at the moment. You know, there's a lot of, you know, you go to business school and half the course is on finance, but nothing on how you deal with a politicized world.
Well, people vote with their dollars. And I think that as time goes on and quality becomes very subjective, right? A shoe company or a clothing company, it's all pretty much the same, probably being made near each other, right? The only way to stand out is, do I align with their viewpoints or not? And so it's you have to tug on the emotional strings. If I'm looking at Folgers coffee, if I'm drinking coffee, and I know Folgers has donated to a certain candidate or they love dogs or whatever, it's just me saying, well, you know what? They're probably the exact same. So the only way to dissect whether they're for me to choose is where they match up in my political world. So yes. As time goes on, as quality, especially with robots and factories and all this stuff changing, technology, the only way to differ is your branding and your marketing. And the only way to do that is with the feeling that you present to your tribe or to the market. And the way you do that is you lean in on politics. So in my opinion, as we go through this journey, we will have to become political to separate ourselves from other businesses. Do you agree with that?
And I think you're seeing that playing out quite a lot. You know, everybody's becoming more political. And it's not just about branding and your customers. It's also about your employees. It's also about your shareholders. You know, how do you keep such a group together now that everybody has a political view? I mean, we've seen Google firing 28 employees or whatever because they were protesting because of what's going on in the Middle East. And we're seeing, you know, universities, they're big organizations too. I mean, they're in a mess at the moment because of all these protests that they're having around the Middle East. So I think totally avoiding political issues in a politicized world is simply no longer possible. And the question is, how do you deal with it? And that's a big challenge, because it totally changes how you think about business and how you think about what business leadership means. Now, there are certainly, I think, an increasing number of businesses taking the stance that you've said, that they're using, I mean, at the end of the day, all our purchases are emotional.
Right. That's what, okay? I was getting to. I meant to bring that up. Glad you did. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in spite of what everybody says, and in spite that we try to rationalize everything and try to put everything into a spreadsheet, otherwise it doesn't exist, you know, all our decisions are fundamentally emotional. And there are various ways of appealing to that. I guess most branding experts would be horrified by your statement that quality doesn't mean very much anymore, but you're probably right. You know, it's all smoke and mirrors to some degree, but it appeals to our emotions in one way or another. And certainly in a politicized world, appealing to those emotions can bring advantages as well as disadvantages. I mean, we've seen recently, I saw a survey recently about how Tesla buyers are shifting. It used to be mainly Democrats who bought Teslas because of the environmental impact. Now, the proportion of Democrats buying Teslas has plummeted because of the political positions that Elon Musk keeps spouting. So, you know, these things make a difference. Now, whether business leaders should be out there, you know, acting essentially as political activists, I think that's a big question. But one thing is for sure, they can't avoid this discussion, however they choose to respond to it.
That is so interesting. You're right. I talk to a lot of liberals and I'm like, oh, you must love Elon Musk for what he's done for the planet. Oh, I hate Elon, right? It has to do with, it has nothing to do with the business of how much it's helping the environment. It's the viewpoints of the individual who's at the helm. That's right. Fascinating.
Yeah.
So,
but he's unusual, huh? That's big.
Another unusual person, right? Very unique. When you have a person who's the richest person potentially in the world, just kind of playing around like he's a kid. It's great. It actually is phenomenal to see, in my opinion. But you bring up a very good point. It is not just with your market, your clients. It's with your team. Now, how can a team live in harmony if they're at each other's throat? I just had a team meeting earlier today. If we were on this different sides politically, there's no way that it's going to be a fun place to work, a fun environment for everybody. So it is in your best interest to assemble a crew that likes working with each other. And I think that back in the day, this was never a situation because nobody knew where each other stood. You invent a thing called social media and you take somebody's thoughts and put it down in a tangible form on a daily basis, you know exactly who they are. And so the creation of social media, to me, made things political. So if someone says, I hate Trump, and they're working alongside somebody who's constantly posting things about, I love Trump, there's going to be a bridge out ahead at some point, right? There's going to be a disagreement. So social media, I think, is the tool that kind of really ripped the mask off of people in the workplace. So I think it's a good thing. In my opinion, I want to know who you are. Do you agree that social media is really the fire starter to it all, I guess, in the workplace?
Yes, I think social media has made a huge difference, you know, for better and for worse. You know, we can now communicate with everybody. We can now form our own social groups, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, social media has brought us advantages, but it's also brought us this polarization. It's also brought us this intolerance in terms of how we speak on social media, which seems to be very different from how we would speak if we were talking face to face.
Okay? The anonymous, right? There's no picture. They can say whatever they want. Yeah.
Right. So you know, it's for better and for worse. Social media has made a huge difference. Now, assembling a team that has all the same values, I think, is doable if you're running a company that has 20 people, maybe even 200 people, maybe even 2,000 people, who knows? But if you're running a company that's spattered across the world, employing 150,000 people, that's not going to happen.
Okay? That's a good point.
So the question is, if you think of yourself as a politician, You think, okay, I employ 150,000 people. It's perfectly reasonable that they all have a different opinion and they all have different political opinions, maybe. How do I run a business with that spread of opinion? So let me give you a practical example. Disney. Now, Disney is a great company run by very bright, intelligent, well-paid people, and they have access and can hire the best consultants in the world. Well, they ran a DEI program, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion program. And in fact, a lot of these diversity, equity, inclusion programs are not diverse or equitable or inclusive at all. They actually push one particular point of view. They push one particular view on what diversity means. They push one particular view on what equity means. Mm-hmm. And they push one particular view on what inclusion means. So when Disney ran this program, about 100 employees wrote an open letter saying, well, those of us who happen to have religious and conservative views now feel totally unwanted in this company. Now, that's not great. So the question is, you know, the importance of a good politics is accepting that people have different points of view and engaging in that discussion in a civil way. Now, if you can keep that going within a company, then, you know, that's great. You accept that people have different views, but you decide on how you're going to run your business. So, you know, we've had, I mean, in the US these days, you're all over the abortion debate. You know, is with different states doing different things. Now, should business get involved in that debate? Well, at one level, they can't avoid getting involved because it has implications for what healthcare plans they provide, for what support they provide to their employees, et cetera, et cetera. So that is a perfectly legitimate involvement because it's related to how you run your business. But should business leaders stand up there and take a position on abortion? Well, you know, nobody elected them to do that. It's not their business. They don't have any democratic legitimacy to push their views on the population. So they need to tread very carefully. Now, if you're a company like, what's it called? Like Hobby Lobby, that's a company that sells arty things. you know, they're a company that wears their Christian values on their sleeve. Mm-hmm. Okay? They've made that part of their brand. So it's perfectly legitimate for them to take a stance on abortion because they have a belief system. But most businesses don't. Most businesses have employees that believe in multiple different things. And if you take something like abortion, which is a very difficult issue, there is no compromise position.
Yeah, you know, either, there really isn't.
No, you're either for it or you're against it, and that's the end of it. So I think that companies need to develop the skills necessary to handle these issues in their business and try to keep as much harmony as possible if they're the sort of business where it's not possible or it's not what you choose to do, to create a group of people, all of whom believe the same thing. You know, there are very many different businesses. But these are political skills. And they need to be developed because they're very, very different from business skills.
So many people ask me, or they come to me and they say, hey, I really admire the fact that you share your true beliefs out on social media, and I wish I could do that. And how are you able to do that and not fear any backlash? And I will say to them, hey, in the very beginning, it was very tough. Number one, I didn't know if I was going to lose customers or gain. Number two, I really didn't know much about politics, so I was going off of what I was able to see. And I guess number three, it was, I realized it was all about the end goal of my life. And I started to envision 5, 10, 20, 25 years from now, do I really want to go through this journey of entrepreneurship, which is so tough, and bite my tongue? And I realized that that would lead to a life of regret if I just held back all my horses of really what I stood for. So I convey, maybe do exactly what I did if you want. Start envision your life, what's that going to look like? But also get very educated on certain topics so you can hold a conversation. And I guess the other part of it is the more you see, the more you are unable to see, or what you see, you can't unsee it. So right. As you go down this journey, you're going to learn more and you're going to transform, and therefore you're going to have a stronger viewpoint. So it to me is, it's just part of the package. What do you recommend to our listeners and our viewers out there that maybe struggle with the aspect of, do I tell people, what do I do? I'd love to do it. How do I do it? What do you say to them?
What I say to them is, you've got to make your own decisions. But I think that the one thing that's important is, if you're going to make your value system, let's not call it political because some people have an allergy to that word.
Right.
if you're going to make your value system an integral part of your brand, if that's the choice you make, then make it consistent. You know, the brand image and the brand meaning has to be consistent. And there aren't many brands today that don't have a political layer, either because they've put it on themselves or because their competitors have, or because, you know, activists have attacked them and labeled them and et cetera, et cetera. So you can't avoid having a political layer these days onto your brand, whether it's a corporate brand or a product brand. How deep that layer goes is a choice that people have to make. It can't be avoided, but the depth of it, I think, is a choice that people have to make. But it has to be consistent, because one of the issues that we're seeing is business leaders standing up and making political statements. And then when you investigate what they're doing in their business, they're running their business totally at odds with that.
Yep. Hypocrisy on full display. You lose faith from the individuals around you.
And there is nothing that is more guaranteed to get activists to investigate your business as you standing up and declaring your values. You can be sure that as soon as you say that, everybody's going to be all over your business trying to see whether you're actually being honest or whether this is just fluff and value signaling. So it has to be consistent. It becomes a strategy question. You know, it's not a question of these, you know, ESG metrics of ticking boxes. You know, how are we doing on environment? Well, the number is 75. How are we doing on social issues? Well, the number is 37. You know, it's become mechanized and meaningless. Whereas, you know, the ESG movement is essentially a political movement. It's saying we expect different things from business in our society than we used to expect 20 years ago. But, you know, for convenience or because they've been pushed in this direction, it's all been reduced to a meaningless tick box exercise. And that's not going to get people anywhere. You know, this has to be incorporated into your business purpose, business strategy, and then into how you run your everyday operations.
Man, that consistency word, right? You have to be consistent, right? And I would think that if you are consistent to a degree and then you back away from it, you lose faith from those people who believed in your original mission. And so I noticed individuals would be patriotic, all about capitalism. But when the fire got a little bit too hot, they backed away from the beliefs and they went into the shadows. In my opinion, that to me is cowardice. And I think of those individuals as, I wouldn't follow you into any battle going forward. So you lose my support. And so consistency, huge aspect, got to be a part of it for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's very hard because human beings, as human beings in general, we're not consistent. You know, we believe different things at different times. So building and maintaining that consistency as best one can is important, and it's a challenge. It's, you know, none of this is easy. That's the bottom line is none of this is easy. And if you're a C-suite executive, you can't deal with these issues by, you know, set up another department and get them to tick the boxes and complete the forms. You know, that's not how you deal with it. This is about the core of your business. And most people haven't got there yet. I mean, what I say to people is that in the world of financialized capitalism that we're emerging from, your average senior executive's way of thinking was, number one, how do I make my quarterly numbers? Number two, what organization do I need and capabilities do I need in order to make those quarterly numbers? And number three, at the outer ring, is, and what's going on out there politically and socially that might affect my business? What I'm saying is that in this new world, we have to turn that on its head. That the first thing you need to think about is what's going on out there politically and socially. Therefore, what organization do you need to build to be successful? And with that organization, how do I make my quarterly numbers? So instead of being from the inside out, we have to look at business from the outside in.
You know, a phrase that I live by is think like an entrepreneur. And I say to my team over and over, just think like an entrepreneur. And you realize how everything's connected. What's going on in the economy? What's going on spiritually? You know, what's going on with banks? You start to be aware of everything and you see how it does affect your business or how to make the chess move around it or to be just prepared for it. So is that your solution too? You were an entrepreneur. You still are. And it seems like that has served you very well. So is that your message to everybody? Whether it's going to be your full-time revenue stream or your main revenue stream, thinking like an entrepreneur does allow you to become more aware in general, self-aware, but also aware of the world. So I think it serves you wherever you go. Do you believe that's the same message?
I think that's right. And the reason is because, you know, what you said is absolutely right. But I think of it in a complementary way, which is that entrepreneurs think backwards. Bureaucrats think forward. Let me explain what I mean. So if you're a big bureaucracy, be it government or the big bureaucracy of a huge company, you're comfortable, you're doing well in today's world. So the way you tend to think is, how can I take what I have today and make it a little bit better, bit by bit? Okay. That's what I call the bureaucratic, and I don't use bureaucratic in a derogatory sense, simply the nature of big organizations. So you think forward. I'm starting from here. I'm doing pretty well. How do I improve day after day? Entrepreneurs think in a totally different way. Entrepreneurs imagine a totally different world and then set about creating it. So they work backwards. You know, I mean, when Elon Musk decided to do electric vehicles, nobody was thinking of that.
Right.
Certainly not on that scale. Okay. Nobody was thinking that private enterprise was going to go into space. So, you know, entrepreneurs think backwards. They imagine, first of all, a totally different world. And then they work backwards and say, how do I get from here to there? And that's a very different way of thinking. And you can't imagine a different world without a very deep understanding of how the world actually works. So it becomes much more important that you have these socio-political views and have a good understanding of how that all fits together. Because without that, you can't think about where the world might go.
God, I love that. I've never heard that. An entrepreneur thinks backwards, a bureaucrat thinks forwards. And so understanding that, like you said, bureaucrats really don't know how things connect. But a person like Elon Musk will be able to see, hey, this is a new vision. This is the future that we're going to. In order for that to happen, let me put the breadcrumbs in place and we need this, 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 and this. Well, a bureaucrat's thinking forward. Oh, we just are going to go and do this and it's going to be a better life. It's not as laid out, in my opinion. And maybe that's where the problems arise. I love that. I'm going to use that.
Yes. And you know, the two approaches have a different level of risk. You know, most entrepreneurs will fail. Many bureaucracies will keep going. So, you know, it's a different level of risk that people are taking. So, you know, it's not that one is right and the other is wrong. It's that it's different. And, we, you know, if there's one thing we need in the world, it's difference. Because without difference and diversity and people thinking in a different way, we're not going to move forward.
Right. Man. Fascinating. I could talk to you for hours. So the website is newpoliticalcapitalism.com. If they go to that, what will they find there? Are they just be able to get in touch with you? Or are they able to get?
They can get in touch. They can get in touch with me. They can. They have a link to buy the book. They have a bunch of podcasts and videos around this subject, and a set of articles that they can flick through if they like. I also publish a bi-weekly newsletter on LinkedIn. People can look at my profile, and there's a bi-weekly newsletter there. The last one, which I published today, I think, in fact, is about, can you get consumers to buy less stuff?
Okay. I gotta check. I think that's how I found you, is LinkedIn. And I got to take a look at this newsletter. So you put it out weekly then, is that right?
Every couple of weeks, more or less.
Excellent. Okay. So guys, his book, The New Political Capitalism, How Businesses and Societies Can Thrive in a Deeply Politicized World. It's on Amazon. It's doing really well. 4.7 stars. You could find him on LinkedIn and the name Joe Zammit. That's Zammit dash Lucia, Lucia. So Joe, fascinating conversation. I've never really thought about how they're different, how they're the same when it comes to business and politics. I just know that most entrepreneurs hate politicians, right? So I know that's the case, but I realize that it's a necessity and there's a way maybe for it to, for both sides to work well together. And I think it used to, hopefully it does in the future.
And not only is it a necessity, I would argue that doing politics at high level is the most difficult job in the world.
Interesting. Wow. Fascinating stuff, man. We'll see. 2024 is going to be the year of chaos. I've always said that because there's a lot at stake. And so,
yes, entrepreneurs thrive on chaos.
We do, right? We run towards the fire and then we figure out how to reap the rewards from it because everybody else is running away from it. So chaos equals opportunity. Never forget that. Think like an entrepreneur and you can win. Guys, pick up his book and check him out on LinkedIn. Joe, thank you so much for being here, man.
Many thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Remember, guys, $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.